Okay, well, it being 6 o'clock, I think we're going to get started. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to this Board of Trustees work session of the Great River Regional Library, 6 p.m. on February 16th. I just want to say a few things. Hello, everyone. And before we get started, we won't have any votes tonight, which is really nice. No roll call votes. This is just a work session, so we don't need more action on anything. So one other thing I just wanted to say is just when with Zoom gatherings like this that are quite large, I know some people haven't appreciated how I've asked Jay to assist with muting people, but this is the largest group I chair. And there's one other group that I chair that's even a little larger. And what I find with large groups is if people forget to mute, you often hear their background. When they cough, sneeze, or do anything else, it's very loud. So it interrupts a meeting quite a bit. So I know it seems a little controlling when I have Jay muting us. I don't think that you all don't have the capacity to do that, but often I even forget to mute myself. So that's why it's nice to have a host person assisting with that. When you're in a group this large, it just, and then the other thing that it affects at times is your bandwidth. So some people will freeze up. They won't be able to speak at all. But we find when everyone's muted, actually when all videos are off, that's when you have the best connection. So for those reasons, that's why I've asked, Jay to assist with muting. So I apologize if that offends anyone. You are all adults. I get that. Zoom meeting is a little more complicated at times than meeting in person. So I ask for your patience with that. Before we get started with the workshop, we're going to go around quick. We've got staff with us tonight, and we don't always get to see all these staff in the room. So we're going to do quick introductions, board and staff. So I'm just going to follow my screen. And when I call your name, if you can just share your name, where you're from, or for staff, what's your position, and how long you've been with Great River Regional Library. So I will start. I'm Lisa Phoebe, current chair, current president, whatever you want to call it. I am Sherburne County Commissioner in Sherburne County. And I will pass it over to Ed.
Thank you, Lisa. I'm Ed Pott, Benton County Commissioner. I live up in the Rice area. This is I'm beginning my fourth year in the library. I am the current vice chair and the finance chair.
And I am beginning my fifth year. I forgot to share that. Lee Lensmeyer. Lee, you're muted.
Lee Lensmeyer, Stearns County. However long Karen has been here, I've been here longer. So I don't know how many years that would be.
Thanks, Lee. Mary Eberly.
Good evening. I am a Sherburne County citizen rep, and I too do not know how long I've been here. I think I'm in my last term. Citizen rep, so thank you.
Thanks, Mary. Karen.
Karen Punzak. I've been the director since 2015, and I've been at Great River for 22 years this month.
Brianne.
Hello, I'm Brianne Johnson, the Communications and Development Coordinator with the library, and I have been with the library for 2.5 years.
Kara, or is it Kara?
I'm the Kara. There are Karas. We say our name exactly the same, so good luck figuring out a rule of thumb on that. My name is Kara Langston. I'm the new patron services supervisor. My little assistant over here is hungry for something. I don't know what at this point. And let's see, how long? I've been here. This is my second month this time around, but all together about a year and a half at Great River.
Patty.
I am Patty Wiletzko, administrative assistant. I've been in this position for 12 years, but with Great River Regional Library for about 16.
Jane.
Hello, I'm Jane Dietz. I'm a citizen rep from Sherburne County. I live in Elk River, and I think I'm just a little over 3 years into the board.
Alan?
Good evening. I'm Al Omdahl from Albany, citizen rep from Stearns County, and I think I am working on 1 month.
Melissa?
I'm Melissa Fee, Wright County citizen member. I think it's been 2 years. I live in Monticello and teach in Annandale.
Mike?
Mike Ketchmark, hello, I'm Wray County Commissioner, newly elected. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Ryan.
Hi, I'm Ryan McCormick. I work with Great River. Like Kara, I am a patron services supervisor, which essentially means we're like regional managers. So between Kara and I, we have a third, Brandy Cantor, and we work with all 32 branches, and I've been here for about 7 years almost.
Carlin.
Hi there, I'm Carlin Forner. I'm a Stearns County citizen rep and I live in St. Cloud. And this is the start of my third year on the board.
Jamie?
Hi, good evening, everyone. I'm Jamie Trenum and I'm the Associate Director of Collection Development, which means that I work with all of the materials. I don't collect debts, I collect materials, anything you can check out from the library. I have been with the library coming up on 14 years in April.
Started when you were 12.
Jay, the keeper of the mute button.
Yeah, I'm Jay Roos. I'm the Associate Director of Information Technology, and I have been with Great River for 21 years. I started just a few months after Karen, I believe.
Zuria.
Hi, I'm Zuria Anjum. I'm a citizen member from Stearns County, and I think this is the start of my second term, so this is the fourth year I've been with their board.
JC.
Hi, my name is JC Wallace. I'm a citizen member from Wright County. I live in Cokato, and I've been on the board for a year.
Okay, Wayne.
Wayne Bauer-Schmidt, citizen rep from Wright County, live in between Buffalo and Maple Lake, and I think this is my sixth year on the board.
Randy?
Hello, I'm Randy Wincher. I'm from Morrison County. I was put here. Probably Karen and a couple of others was in a kind of a unique situation. So I think this is my seventh or eighth year. I can't remember when I came to board.
Okay. Dave?
Hello, I'm Dave. I'm a Todd County Commissioner and a Lone Ranger on the board. And I've been on the board, I think, 8 years. This is my last year, I believe. So I think Mary and I both term out the same. So.
Okay, did I miss anyone? I think I got them all. So the agenda tonight is all Karen and company. So I am going to just turn it over to Karen. And if you already haven't, please mute yourself. And when you would like to speak, unmute yourself. Take it over, Karen.
Thanks, Lisa. I'm going to start with the fourth quarter stats. I'll throw them up on your screen, but you should have this in your packet so you can follow along. These are the statistics we tracked with the last strategic plan. So some of you have been seeing this every quarter for the last 5 years. Last year was an anomaly year, but it was kind of interesting to see how normal some of our stats were. And you can definitely see where some of the strongest activity came from in terms of our digital use. So like online catalog requests, we had hoped to hit a little higher target, but we were definitely over last year. So that's people requesting things from home. Chat reference went through the roof when we got the new platform this year. Jamie will talk more later about digital library use, but you can see that we've got a really strong adoption rate this year in terms of number of people on our digital platform and then checking out materials. Borrower numbers was a decline over the last 5 years. We were hoping to stabilize that number this year, but with COVID, that just didn't happen. We're still seeing some drops there. It's been really hard to retain people because a large number of our borrower numbers come from those first-time registrations each year, and that was greatly impacted by people's ability to actually come in the building. Book a librarian was something that was impacted by, you know, the shutdown, and then program attendance. We haven't done programming since first quarter, so most of that is first quarter stats. That's where we saw the biggest hit, and that was a growth area prior to this year. Website use was pretty steady. We suspect that this number dropped partly because our programming numbers had gone away. So a lot of our website hits are from the events page on the website, and with no events happening, we had fewer hits on the events page. Other interesting statistics, you can see, you know, some of the data we just didn't collect. Summer reading program was when we were shut down, but we still managed to reach some kids. It was the first time we'd done a virtual summer reading program. Social media had some substantial growth again this year, exceeded targets. It was one of our main forms of communication with the public. Jamie's on here. I don't know if she wants to share anything with databases, but I will leave that for the impact report part of this, and we can jump back to this page if we need to. You can see that was kind of hit and miss. And then I think the one thing I really wanted to point out here was the circulation stats, which is going to be a little different here. The circulation stats you can see in your packet, we were starting to see the numbers recover at the local level and some locations as early as October and November. October was included in the third quarter report. You can see in December, almost half of the libraries actually had an increase month over month with statistics at the local level. So while the total number for the year is definitely down, that month over month number was actually higher. And that continued in January with about a quarter of the libraries. So even though those are pre-COVID numbers that we're comparing against, we're actually seeing physical circulation come back and increase over 2020 in some locations right now, which is kind of remarkable when you think about how hard it is for people to get out and see things. Are there any questions about the statistical report that I can answer? Otherwise, I will turn this over to Brianne. And Brianne, I can put the annual report up here if you'd like to talk through that.
Yeah, so the last few years with the annual report, we have done this type of format. And this past year, we really wanted to highlight our different successes and stories that we had been receiving from our communities and our patrons. And so we wanted to highlight our curbside pickup, our hotline, the Wi-Fi hotspots, our new streaming service. In the summer, we did story strolls. We changed to take home story times with crafts, take and make crafts, print to go, and then also formed a lot of partnerships throughout 2020 as well. So we really wanted to highlight those things that were most important. So that is on this one page along with popular titles, etc. And then on this back page, it won't, when it is mailed, it looks correct. So if you're wondering why that part is upside down. But we highlighted some of our significant numbers or data that we track. And within 2020, this gives you an accurate representation. And also highlights the 2020 and 2019 revenue and operating expenditures, along with highlighting our major donors as well and our fundraising initiatives throughout the year. Any questions before jumping into the impact report? This report will be mailed to all board members, donors who have given in the past year, and other county, city representatives.
Madam Chair, so Dave, I have a question.
Go ahead, Dave.
Okay. I don't know, maybe we do this and maybe we don't. And Brianne, maybe you can answer it, or Karen. When we have volunteers, and I see we have 147, do we ever put a dollar amount to that?
I know we have to for the state reports sometimes. Last year was a bit of a challenge because right now we're not letting volunteers come into the library for the most part. So that number is actually a bit of an undercount. In past years, we've also reported the number of hours they put in. But because so many volunteers would be helping us right now if we let them, we just didn't feel it was fair to report it out this year.
And does that help us in our formulas in any way?
No, it just helps us with our work. And, you know, honestly, it's not just the work. It's the advocacy. It's the connection to the community. It's the donor support. It's all of that.
Yeah, very valuable. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions?
I'll move to the impact report. Did this, can you see it on the screen? Did it change? Okay, good. I think this is Jamie.
We just wanted, this is kind of a blow up of the numbers that are included in the annual report. A few things that I wanted to highlight for you. Karen had alluded to the digital checkouts. I mean, gosh, thank goodness for the digital library, because we were able to keep people connected during the real doldrums of the pandemic, during those first couple of months. We had a record year for sure with our digital checkouts. We invested pretty heavily in the digital library as well, because there's just been challenges with the publishing industry and print, as well as being able to deliver that material to patrons in a timely fashion. So 259,000, over 259,000 checkouts last year. As Karen alluded to previously, the digital library was our second highest performing library in 2020. Second only to St. Cloud, which circulated about 395,000 items. So it was a big year. With that, we were also able to launch our Hoopla streaming service, kind of bringing us into the 21st century. We have over 10,000 movies that patrons can stream from home. We also offer the Wi-Fi hotspots, the GRRL, to go Wi-Fi system. So helping patrons who don't have that connectivity at home still access the digital collection is really important. We grew the number of people who are using the digital library, as well as the number of titles in the library, the digital library. So that 10,000 movies isn't even included, because the digital library titles that are included are things that we purchase by the title, whereas Hoopla is a subscription package service and we pay by the circulation. So unlike a book that we purchase, we only pay for the videos that patrons view. So it's sort of like a pay-per-view. Karen had also mentioned databases. Those statistics are reported separate. We had some real high-performing databases, as well as some not-so-strong performing databases. I think that having access available from home really highlighted what was of value to our patrons. So Ancestry.com is a brand name. It's a service that patrons are familiar with. Thanks to the vendor, they provided that service for users at home, because typically you have to be in the library to use it. So those numbers went through the roof, and folks were able to do some of that research from home. And I actually just over the weekend got a notification from ProQuest, the vendor, that the counting mechanism was off during the summer, and they anticipate that the usage was actually double what was reported, which was huge. So I think that brings us closer to like 70,000 searches if you're really counting at home. But so with all of that, it's managing the collection in a different way. It's a lot of moving parts to keep track of. But I think it goes to show that we were able to provide some new innovative ways to continue to serve patrons, despite having our physical doors shut for a period of time, although we were up with curbside in April and open again at lots of our locations in May. Any questions?
Mary has a question.
Yes, Jamie. Hi. So what does that really mean? I mean, I get all the statistics and all that, but so we had more people using the hotspots, Wi-Fi, digital, and fewer people using the facility, right?
Yes. Yes, more people were using our digital resources than ever before. And it was a greater percentage of patrons than in the past as well. So our active rate of patrons who are engaging with that digital collection on a regular basis also grew. So it's not like people tried it and they're like, nah, that really wasn't for me. We're seeing sustained growth as well. So it wasn't just like there was definitely a peak and then it plateaued a little bit, but it's not going back down to where people were before. So I think that what it means is patrons value both. They value being able to come into the library to pick things up and to interact with staff, but they also value being able to view things from home. Does that answer your question?
I think so. Do they, are they happy? People
want more. I think yes, and folks would love to see more. One of the challenges that it's not, I don't like to belabor the point, but our dollars just don't stretch as far with digital as they do with print. The pricing model itself is higher. Even compared to what a consumer would pay for a bestseller on your Kindle, for example. There are price increases for libraries, and there's also restrictions placed on, that copy will expire after 2 years or 52 circulations, whichever happens first. Whereas a print book, we have things in our collection that are still circulating from many, 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 many moons ago. So it's a challenge to meet the increased demand because people still want print too. You can't necessarily take from the print budget and just put it into digital. So we are very grateful for all of the efforts of our communications and fund development team and all of our donors, because they do help to grow the digital collection.
So is that the only way to fix that, or to change the allocations?
We continue to reallocate. The reference budget, for example, has shrunk over time, and we realign things. So a few of the digital resources that didn't quite make the cut, Chilton's, although it's fantastic and I wish that more people would use it, that usage declined over the past 5 years. So we do discontinue things when the usage declines, and then reallocate where there's evidence of demand.
And is that lack of knowledge or what? Don't know.
No, it's hard to say. It's hard to say without talking with people. I think it's one of those things that people need it when they need it, because I have heard from a couple of patrons who miss Chilton's and Reference USA. And one of the challenges with the public library is to offer most people what they want most of the time.
They want everything right now.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks, Jamie. We're going to need to move along. Jamie.
Yes, ma'am.
So, yes, thank you.
Question. Do you want
Zuria?
I just had a quick question. So how much of our budget is allocated to the digital media at this point?
That is a good question. So our collection budget, I don't have the percentages off of the top of my head. Our collection budget is about $958,000. We're dedicating about 10% right now to the digital collection. That does not include gift funds. So that's the digital collection as well as the database piece. So our subscription services too. Good question. Thank you, Zuria.
So it's
and
fairly...
how often do we review it to see if this is the right amount that we want to have, and do we change it? When was it last changed?
So last year, the allocations weren't necessarily changed as much as shifted from line to line. We did not spend as much on print. So I kind of look at that as a big bucket. And so the collection budget, we just shifted where things were. I'll be taking a hard look at the 2022 budget as we're coming up into the budget planning session. So I do look at it every year, but this is the first time that we've had such a dramatic growth since we first started offering the service.
Thank you.
Good questions. It's a good time to be looking at it with the budget coming up and our new strategic plan as we're entering into that planning process. So this part of the meeting was focused on the last strategic plan and last year's progress. Our county budget presentations and our county activity presentations will be based on the information you saw tonight. So if you're a county commissioner, expect to see some of this again. Feel free to share that impact report. As we move into the next part of the meeting, these are the pieces that we've put in place to start forming the next strategic plan. We hope to have that draft to you this spring. It's something we were supposed to have done the end of last year. And the first piece of that is the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Committee survey results. Most of you were on the board last year. For those of you who weren't, we did do a survey through the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion toolkit from the Charities Review Council. And I'm going to share the presentation tonight. I have Zuria Anjum and Amy Schrock, I believe, will be joining us too to help with the presentation. Jay, can you make sure that Amy's in the room? I think she's here. All right, I'm going to share my screen. Can you see the presentation slides?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. So Carlin was actually part of this committee, as was Ryan McCormick. They're also with us tonight. Carlin, with COVID, was involved in the initial planning phases, but the final results she didn't get to be part of. So some of this will be a surprise to her, I think, because we didn't get to that part with her. But we are going to share with you tonight some information about diversity, equity, and inclusion. We'll also go over an overview of the survey results. The survey results in full are 16 pages long, so they are not included in your packet. If you want more detail after the meeting, let me know. And then Zuria will also be helping us walk through the recommendations that we have for the strategic plan as we move forward under this lens of diversity, equity, and inclusion. All right, Amy, are you here with us?
I think so, yes. Can you hear me?
Yes. So okay. I'm going to move to this next slide. Do you want to maybe introduce yourself a little bit and then jump in?
Yes. Hi, I'm Amy Schrong. I'm a collection development librarian. I've been with Great River for almost 15 years, come June. Anyway, this first slide, we are talking about equity versus equality, just in case some of you might be interested in what the difference is. This image here is kind of one of the most widely used images out there. So with equality, everybody gets a box to stand on. With equity, they take into account the different heights of the children. So the shortest child, of course, gets two boxes. Another way you can think about it is, like, some plants need a lot of sunlight more than others. Some need more water than others. So in equity, you're really taking into consideration what that individual or what that individual plant really needs to achieve kind of the same goal. And our work group has been working on a lot of things, as you can see here. I guess I'll just quickly go through some of these. So the diversity audit of the collection, our collection is quite large, so we've only started doing this with a few of our items. We started with picture books, and we did some of YA, and we did part of the adult fiction section. The main reason for doing this is we wanted to get kind of a baseline of where we're at. Part of the problem is what is out there in the publishing world. So you might want certain things in your collection, but they just don't exist due to how the publishers are. So we're just kind of doing an audit to see where we're at. As Karen mentioned, we did the survey. We're also sharing information sources on our daily news. Cataloging is interesting. You know, the catalog system we have was created back in 1876 under Melville Dewey. And so it has to change with new things that happen. I don't think Melville Dewey could, you know, foresee space travel, for example. So we're working on things like that. Our performer database we're just adding tags to help people identify performers for their programs that they might want to use, displays, crafts. Multi-language resources includes books in the collection, audio, things of that nature. But we're also working on like signage and things of that nature to welcome people into the library. And yeah, so are there any questions on any of those? There's a lot there. So.
Yeah, Madam Chair, this is Randy. You know, looking at these here, there's a lot of good information here. I do have a problem with the library card access without an address or photo ID. How would we address somebody if they take a book or whatever?
So that is something we're exploring. We haven't actually done it yet, but one of the models we're looking at is coming out of California, and they used it as a security measure in order to manage their computer use. So we're definitely looking at what options would work for us, and any change to policy would come to the board for discussion and approval. So some of these action steps are things we're looking into. And this list came from the staff work group that was formed early last January. We had a discussion with over 40 staff, and then a smaller work group has been working on these action steps since mid-year. Amy's part of that group. And Amy, did you have anything else on this slide? Are we ready to move to the next?
Yeah, it's on to you with the survey.
We'll be back to you shortly. All right, so the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Toolkit came from the Charities Review Council. It's something we administered in October. We sent it to a variety of sources. The board got it, our patrons got it through the e-newsletter, our staff received it, our friends of the library received it, we reached out to community organizations. We received 181 completed surveys, 11 board members responded, so that was a fantastic result. Close to half the staff had responded. Between the board and the staff, though, over half were the total respondents. So we were a little concerned about the response rate from internal audiences compared with external audiences. We only had 17 people of color respond. And because it was mostly our staff, the responses were definitely skewed to white women older than 36, because that's largely our workforce. There was also a lack of youth response because we were using email to administer it. We weren't able to reach people who are younger than 18. These are some slides that come directly from the survey results. They're just a snapshot of the results, but they kind of give you an overview of what came back. Overall, people felt like most people are very well represented or somewhat represented by our services. However, if you look into the breakouts for some groups, it was a little interesting. So for example, people with differing abilities, it was about a 50-50 split saying whether or not we actually serve people with abilities, differing abilities. In addition, the LGBTQ community had a similar split. If you go into the open-ended responses for those results, you can see that when people answered the question about abilities, they were mostly thinking about our facilities. Are they handicapped accessible? In case of LGBTQ, they largely saw themselves represented in the collection if they saw themselves represented. The questions that dug into the process section of the survey, you can see most questions were pretty much in alignment. That being said, staff were largely less optimistic about some of our services than others. And that had a lot to do with how close they are to the work. They know what's possible versus what we're actually doing. The one that had the largest gap was question number 5, which was specifically about having youth involved with decision making. And some of the other larger gaps were around whether we were engaging external audiences, like people in our community, in our decision making before moving forward. The power section shows that most groups felt their level of involvement was about right. Patrons were seen as the least engaged group if you defined patrons as participants and partners as participants. There was a small perception in some of the results that the board has too much power, but it wasn't very overt. You add the green and the orange together, which was the advice of the Charities Review Council, you can see things were pretty even in terms of how the power is distributed at Great River, but there's room for improvement in engaging participants and partners in our decision making. And I think this is the part where Amy takes back over to talk about the focus group. Because we had a lack of participation, we reached out to some people, leaders in our community who were people of color, to get their observations on the survey.
Yes. First of all, it was just a really great group, and they were really invested in the library and in trying to give us feedback, which was really helpful. So a big thank you to Zuria and Karen for getting that group together. So yes, as you can see here, one of their main concerns is that, yes, we should try to reach a wider group, possibly by doing some group gatherings after COVID, get together in a room and talk it out. And possibly with a person of color leading the discussion, or if it's with a youth group, you know, having a younger person leading those discussions to get feedback. Partially to help with trust and to help with any kind of understanding. And yeah, we talked about process a little bit with Karen. And so they said, well, maybe we want to focus on the process where all of the observations are a little bit closer together. The responses are closer together. And our marginalized groups are not involved in decision making usually and planning. We're not really sure what that looks like or what that means for the library, to be quite honest. So perhaps we will figure that out in the future. And I think the next slide, Karen. Yep. Okay. So again, reaching out to that wider audience to discuss what they really think they need from the library, and how they perceive the library, how they use the library. And also to be more of a welcoming, if again, they don't see us as welcoming, to be more welcoming in certain ways and be more inclusive with our signage and things of that nature. And I'm gonna turn it over to Zuria for some of our ideas.
Thank you, Amy. Just going back 1 second to the first slide where we have that picture, one thing that I would like to emphasize on it, where we talked about equity versus equality, I just want to emphasize that if we do this work, it is not just the people who are excluded that will benefit. We will all benefit from it because we are not the same community that we were 100 years ago, and we are not going to be this community 50 years from now or 100 years from now. So if we do not adapt or change to keep everybody along and bring everybody along with us, then it will be something that comes up even more as time goes by, where more and more people are marginalized and are pushed out. And we are doing services to a very selective group of people. So having said that, I'd like to go back to some of the recommended goals that we came up with as a discussion from all this stuff that we had done. And we decided to divide the goals in the three structures that we did the survey in, going back to people, process, and power. So the first one is people. And in this, keep in mind that some of the staff, people that had responded to us, who are not from the majority of the community, but are from the marginalized community, feel unwelcome or don't feel as comfortable in the library because they don't see themselves represented either in the board, they don't see themselves represented in the staff, or they don't see things or decisions that are made which are reviewed through an equity lens when the library makes them. So our hope is that we can work towards in the future looking at decisions that we make through an equity lens and provide training opportunities for working with patrons with special needs, incorporate best practices for inclusion in the recruitment process and job descriptions to diversify staff. I think this is one of the most important points that we need to work on and see if we can make our staff more inclusive and diverse. Another thing that I think will really be helpful for patrons, which I think we had tried with a grant in the past, was adding a bilingual cultural navigator position. I don't think that this position is something that we can do on an off and on basis when we get a grant money to support it. I think that is something that is needed on a regular basis that we need to budget for and plan for. Because again, if we get these communities to come with us, we all benefit from how they learn and how they work in our community and how they support us. And then the last point is educate our communities and the public about the benefits of this work. Moving on to the process section. During our focus group, it was pointed out a lot that, you know, there's a lot of, not exact, we don't celebrate religious stuff, but there's a lot of Christmas stuff around the, on the holidays time, but we, yet we never even acknowledge that there are other groups that celebrate other holidays. Not just religious stuff, stuff to do with Immigration Day, the World Immigration Day, the African American, month, which we're currently having, other things that LGBTQ stuff with the Pride Week, and acknowledging those and having signs and symbols and displays about them to address that that is something that is going on in our community. So people who are walking in, if they are from that group, they also see themselves represented as somebody who's a part of the community and welcome at the library. Zoom focus groups is something that we think we even need to do at this point with the pandemic because unfortunately, with the way things are going, it doesn't seem like that we're going to be able to do those in person for quite some time. And we think that targeting specific groups of people who are invested and doing work for different communities like the youth community, our target was to see if we can get the school district and the schools involved in this and have some representation from school about what would they like the library to provide more. Similarly for the LGBTQ community, the seniors community, and other communities that are in the neighborhood. And then I think the library offers so much. I actually learn every, sometimes new things every day when I'm going through the website or stuff. To be honest, I did not know about Hoopla. So that is something I learned today. So I think we offer so much, but I don't know whether a lot of people are aware of it. So if there is any way we can reach out and let them know what we offer, I think we will get more of a participation from the community. And obviously everything that we do needs to require money. And so we need to look for partnership and grant opportunities to see if we can create a Somali language and other cultural content for the collection. I think the Spanish community also would very much appreciate if we have some of that culture represented in our collections and work on that. We also talked about doing an amnesty day for fines and reducing or eliminating fines for people of color who may have it or marginalized communities, because obviously with the pandemic, paying book fines is the last thing you have on your mind. And if you're not using the library because of that, then that is unfortunate because we can help you with so much. Creating a newsletter or handouts, asking for feedback on what people would like from the library. This was something we thought we could eventually have at the checkout desks. So people in different languages, so people can pick it up and it would offer them an option of letting us know by email or some other way of form what they would like the library to do more from them and what would they like to have more. One of the things that we also talked about was options for land acknowledgement. As we all understandably know, the land that we are living on is not our ancestral land. The land that we are living on is Native American land that belonged to the Native American people. And they suffered a lot while it was taken away from them and are still suffering. A lot of the inclusive work that I do and I have seen other community members do and faith members do is before the meeting, they have a brief land acknowledgement, which basically is a couple of statements saying that this land is not originally ours. And we acknowledge that and we honor those people who this land belongs to. And then the last thing is develop programs and services for patrons with special needs. I think a lot of time what we do cater for is the general population, which is very good. But I think we do need to put a focus on specific communities with special needs. Maybe something for people who have disabilities and need some special kind of services or a program that would benefit them specifically, tailored more to their needs. And then last, but certainly not the least, talking about the board. Again, I think we have a very diverse board, which is very good in terms of people represented from different counties and representing their county population. However, we lack a diversity on the board in terms of people of different color, people of different sexual orientation, people who are marginalized and would probably have something to say. So maybe looking for involving them in having some say in the board. And then obviously looking at every decision with an eye to equity and racial equality. I think a lot of times we assume just simple things like the fact that we have a library, we have services, people should come and avail this. What we don't realize is there are people who might not have the money to have gas to come to the library. And so how can we reach them and see if we can provide services to them too? Because they are also our patrons, even though that they are disadvantaged and cannot come or partake of the facilities that we provide. And funding for resources to support the work, this is obviously going to be crucial. However, I don't think that they should totally rely on grants. And I think, and a lot of the members agreed that this is something that should be part of the budget of the library to work on these issues so that it's a continuous process and it doesn't have ebbs and flows into it. Sharing core values and DEI efforts during board orientation and maybe having some presentations about it during the board meetings about what the DEI work involves. And then management of highlighting the DEI efforts in the board reports so that people are aware of what we are doing. And then they can speak up and give us some feedback about what do they think we are doing and what can we do better about it. Thank you so much for listening. If anybody has any questions, I would be more than happy to answer those.
Madam Chair, Karen. If I could ask Zuria or make a comment on her presentation and ask a couple of questions.
Sure, sure. Go ahead, Wayne.
It's a great job on the comprehensiveness of the approach of the presentation. Very ambitious. And I'd like to understand if there is a approach where we can build some of these partnerships. Who are those possible partners in the community? You know, I think of faith leaders, that type of thing. But is there kind of a next step to that break down the approach? Because my fear is it's pretty ambitious, and I think it's important that it succeeds. Is there any thought with the focus group that was pulled together on taking these steps?
I think where we're at, Wayne, is that we do need some more specific ideas from the specific focus groups that we would like to hold following this to identify very specific needs. And I do think that we need to develop those partnerships. So I think this is a great start because it has shown us what we need to do, but this is just a start and we need to keep working on it. And so the board has to support it, obviously, because without the board's support, it would be very hard for the library staff or members from the community to do anything towards making this move forward.
And as Zuria said, this is a really good time for us because this is when we're developing our next 5-year long range plan. So we can break this down into the plan as a 1-year, 2-year, 3-year, year 4, year 5 set of goals that build upon each other. We also recently applied for a VISTA that, if is funded, could help build some of the Zoom focus groups even as early as this fall.
I guess the last
question. This is JC Wallace. I have a quick question.
Okay, JC. Wayne, we'll come back. We'll circle back.
Sorry about that, Wayne. I didn't realize you had another question. I just wanted to know, these focus groups, where are you getting the people in the focus groups from? So in other words, is it mostly Stearns County or are you doing more out state?
Our hope is with the Zoom platform, we could actually reach a larger group.
We haven't had any focus targeted groups as yet. We just had one community focus group in which we got some people of color that are in our local community to come and say, hey, we did this survey. What do you think would help the community? So these are all the suggestions that came out with. And our hope is that when we do those targeted focus groups through Zoom, we can be able to reach out people from all over the area that we service and not a specific county or a specific location.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair.
Mary.
So at this point, they've been focused on Stearns County, right? St. Cloud.
The survey went
no.
The whole region. The focus group was people from Create Community in St. Cloud who are also associated with St. John, St. Ben's, and then Zuria had some connections at St. Cloud State as well.
All right. Well, I was glad to hear that you're not only focusing on the Somali community, but Hispanics and other cultures. And that's important. I mean, diversity is diversity. So I'm glad to hear that we're looking into Hispanics, which would be in some of our other library locations and good. Thank you.
Keep in mind, Mary, that we are also looking at people with disabilities. And that's, I think we need to look at each and every one of our locations with that lens and make sure that all of them have fulfilled the requirements for the ADA requirements to be accessible for everybody with disabilities, whether it's physical or mental health. And similarly, not just different communities from the Mexican and Somali, but people with different gendered identity.
Or Native American.
Correct. All of those people who feel marginalized, we need to be helping them to feel welcome.
So how about those with disabilities?
So that's what we... Yeah, so we would like to hold a focus group with people with disabilities that have a wide range of disabilities and ask them what kind of things would they like that would make them feel welcome to a place in a library. I'll just tell you a simple example from the mental health point of view, because that's my area of expertise. Yeah. We have so many veterans and people with PTSD. And for them, any place which has unexpected noises or places where there are no signs for exits are places where they feel that they are trapped or places where they feel unsafe. So, you know, there are simple things that you can do for that. You can create a separate quieter area. You can create a signs where it says very clearly how to get out of the building if somebody needs to. But it's very simple things that you can do that make a very significant difference in the person who is struggling with that disability.
And they're typically not very expensive or any of that, so the county commissioners won't get all freaked out about how much.
So even if there is money. Even if there's money involved, Mary, I think that that money needs to be spent on this. Yes. It's as important as anything else that we are doing.
All right.
Okay. Other questions or comments?
Carlin? Yeah, thanks. I wanted to first say thank you to the staff committee that has been working on this, and then Zuria and Karen and Ryan and Amy for all the work that you've put into this too. And I really appreciated the recommendations and how much they also aligned, which this is next on the agenda, but with the mm-hmm. EDGE survey, especially related to diversifying library staff and the questions about language and the, going back to that, you know, the bilingual cultural navigator position. I noticed in the EDGE survey that a lot of the questions that we answered no to were questions, you know, around accessibility and language. And so both thinking in terms of, you know, broadening the cultures and folks who are, you know, represented in the library staff and who are served at the library and can come to the library and know that there's someone there who can explain to them in their language, you know, what something is and guide them through. So there's that aspect of it, but also the focus on, you know, on accessibility in terms of folks with, you know, differing abilities and disabilities. And so I think that, you know, these recommendations that you've put forward really, really align so well with what's next on the agenda on this EDGE survey. So just lifting it up and also the point about how it's important to fund this with our dollars and not to just outsource it to grants, because I think that shows where priorities are. If we're not going to allocate the money to support these things, then just asking foundations to support this whenever there are grant dollars available, that, you know, that really raises the question of, you know, is this an actual priority for the library or not? So thank you very much for all of your work on this.
Others?
Madam Chair, my last yes. question was, the county board members probably would know this better. Health and Human Services and key staff there, they see marginalized and disabled people. Is there potentially any, I don't want to use the word support, but input from the counties as to, you know, where there are areas of under-supported groups.
Wayne, this is Commissioner Pop. I follow your question somewhat, but are you talking pertaining to the library or pertaining to all of human services?
More pertaining to the library providing input where, again, this is a very encompassing, comprehensive approach. Mm-hmm. I fear it might not be as successful if we don't get key input from underserved areas of diversity.
Right. Well, you know, Benton County took a big step, and we moved some of our human services people to St. Cloud because we know that East St. Cloud, you know, was running 65% of our human services clients. But as far as them having any extra time to do some of these things, they're pretty much overworked already. So that part, I don't know how that would work.
I think that goes back to having some staff that is working for all the counties, and that's a centralized staff that is at the library, not specific to any single county, because we can have the same person do the same work for every county instead of every county having to try to figure out this work with different staff members.
Hey, any other questions or comments? I really want to thank the team for their work so far, and I really look forward to seeing how this is going to be incorporated into our strategic plan as we move forward. Almost every entity I am on right now is working on diversity, equity, and inclusion. I just had about a 2-hour conversation with our staff in the county who's charged with this. And so I think possibly that staff person, Wayne, to your question a little bit, may be able to help. Definitely our Health and Human Services Department can identify some of our marginalized groups of people and individuals to be able to solicit their input, but I appreciate the work of this group and look forward to seeing how we move forward with these, with this. So.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Zuria.
I would just like to hone in on one of the items that was under suggestion and bring that to the board's attention for consideration, which is the land acknowledgement. And that is just a statement that you make at the beginning of every board meeting. I have an example if the board would be willing to listen to it, or I can certainly send it by email. But I think that as we move towards recognizing that we are different people from different areas who have come to this land and have gotten so much stuff from here, so many benefits, we do need to recognize those people who this originally belonged to and who unfortunately are not as fortunate as us.
So Zuria, you want to share that with us now?
Yes. So the acknowledgement that I have is, it says, we ask that you take a moment to honor and acknowledge that we are on the ancestral homelands of the Dakota and Anishinaabe. Indigenous people have a long-standing history and connection to the land since time immemorial and are the original stewards of lands and waters. Many American Indians were forcibly exiled from their land because of aggressive and persistent settler colonialism and U.S. governmental policies, but they persevered. We make this acknowledgement to honor the Dakota and Anishinaabe people, ancestors, and descendants, as well as the land itself. And it obviously does not have to be the exact statement. This is one of the statements that we have used as an example.
So I think if you could get a copy of that to Karen so that could get emailed to the board, mm-hmm. so people can spend some time looking at that, and maybe we'll bring that up at our next board meeting.
Thank you.
It was definitely
okay.
We were advised to research the issue before actually adopting something. So
we'll keep working on it, so, and let you know.
Thank you. Okay, we are beyond time. All essence of time tonight has gone out the window, which is fine. This is really important stuff, and I appreciate everyone. So we're going to move on to number 6, 7, and 8. I'm just going to throw it back to Karen.
We are going to try to still get you out on time because I have an amazing team. We have a plan.
You do.
So the EDGE assessment was in your packet. This is something we conducted at the end of 2019. It was something the board had actually allocated some funds for. It is a tool released by the Urban Libraries Council in terms of public technology benchmarks. So I did include the full assessment for your review in the packet. And as you can see, there's a lot of different areas we could hone in on. One of the areas that was interesting in terms of where our biggest gap was in terms of assessment. So when you think about needing to get Zoom focus groups from a wide range of voices, like Harlan said, there's intersection here between the EDGE assessment and the diversity, equity, and inclusion group. So you can see the recommended action steps that the leadership team and I have kind of winnowed down from this EDGE assessment. These benchmarks will be built into the strategic plan. We decided not to include all of the things that were recommended because some of them just didn't seem practical or useful. So in the interest of time, I'll let you look through that. But if you have any questions about the EDGE assessment, I'd be happy to answer them.
Any questions about the EDGE assessment? Mary? You'll need to unmute yourself.
All right. Can you hear me?
Yep.
All right. Well, we look kind of mediocre, I think. And I'm disappointed in that and surprised, actually. So we have lots of room for improvement, right? Is that your assessment, Karen?
Yes. Well, and I think one of the challenges for Great River is it's a really large system with a really thin budget. Like, we are being compared against other systems that serve over 400,000 people or more. Well, think about who those places are. That's in Minnesota, that's Hennepin County. They've got 10 times the budget we do. So it's not surprising that we're not hitting all of the benchmarks as high as we just don't have the budget to support it.
So that's our excuse.
We will continue to work toward the benchmarks, but the whole reason for benchmarking is to show where the gaps are and where you can improve next time. Yes. So we'll probably run this assessment again the next time the strategic plan comes up, assuming that it still exists.
Well, and okay. I get that. And I don't mean to disparage. But we do have room for improvement, right?
Always.
Always.
Continuous improvement is part of our culture.
Yes.
Okay, Jay, did you have something?
The only thing I want to throw out there is one of the things we also recognized is that there are a number of the benchmarks that are heavily facilities dependent, even though it's technology.
Yeah.
A lot of that is facilities based, and we're in some ways hamstrung because we don't own the facilities. Mm-hmm. We can do as much as our local city is willing to cooperate with us on. So that's another thing I wanted to point out.
That's helpful. Thank you.
Okay,
Karen. How about number 7?
Ryan is going to be talking us through the community meeting summary. It is in your packet. Is it okay if I don't put it up on the screen, or do you want me to put it on the screen, Ryan?
If it's looking at Ryan or looking at the document, I was going to suggest looking at the document.
Okay, I'll work on that while you start talking.
Okay, so I will be brief, but we did a summary or a series of community meetings over the past few years as part of the 2016-2020 strategic plan. We identified operational excellence and community focus as two of the organizational priorities that were necessary for us to provide outstanding library service. So to act upon the priorities, we did about 4 or 5 meetings a year from 2016 to 2019. We invited the general public and various stakeholders, city councilors, mayors, administrators, county commissioners, members of friends groups, members of local library boards, local teachers, school administrators, politicians, service groups, et cetera. And the overarching goal, of course, was to learn more about how Great River could adopt library services to meet unique local goals. But the meetings were also beneficial in strengthening the bond and the relationship between Great River and the cities and community leaders. The timing was pretty good too. I think Karen had been the executive director for about 1 hot minute when we started them. So it was kind of a nice chance for her to get out and meet people and make some introductions. each meeting basically followed the same framework. Great River staff welcomed everybody. We introduced ourselves. We agreed on discussion guidelines. The local branch manager, known as the LSC, then provided some community statistics. They talked about the community's median age, the median household income, the percentage of students who were proficient in reading at the third grade level. That's a state standard. The percentage of households that were cost burdened, meaning that the number of people that spent 30% or more of their income on housing, and the percentage of people living in poverty. And they also provided information on how those numbers compare to the county and the state as a whole. Each branch had also identified a local target audience that they were working with, families in poverty, new Americans, the elderly, teenagers, kids pre-K before kindergarten. So they talked to the community member attendees about who they were working with and what they were doing to work with that group and how they had decided, partnerships that were developed, those kinds of things. And all that information kind of set the stage for discussion. And then we talked about what are the core factors that give life to the community. Outside of work, what do you spend the most time doing in the community? What are some of your personal challenges as a resident? Then a little bit of envisioning. 3 to 5 years from now, the library and the community have an even more productive relationship. What's different from today? And finally, what steps should Great River take to help our community thrive? So we brainstormed, we discussed, we took notes, and then at the end, we compiled a summary of the conversation. We posted it on the staff website. We sent it out to the attendees that did show up, as well as the initial invitation list, and we got some positive comments from doing that. I think we heard back from 2 state senators that said, hey, I couldn't make it, but I appreciate this information. The information we got was pretty helpful. There were some limitations to it, to be fair. Some libraries had pretty good attendance, others not so much. And some of the ones with really good attendance did kind of draw a homogenous group. For example, in one library, the group was like predominantly retired people who were really into the arts. And so their perspective might not necessarily be what a younger person who doesn't care about the arts values in their community or in their library. But in the board packet there, we have the summary of the meetings. Some of the answers are fairly clear in where there might be an opening for developing library services. For example, in a community where like the outdoors or wellness are super popular, you know, do we offer snowshoes or frisbee golf kits to check out? Others are maybe less obvious, but perhaps there's a room for opening some new services. For example, a community with like a lot of transportation challenges. Well, we're probably not going to open a bus line to bring people out of the community, but maybe we can make sure we have Wi-Fi hotspots to kind of bring the world to them. Maybe we can make sure that our libraries have meeting space with video conferencing technology so that person who can't get to their doctor's appointment 2 towns over can still meet with that practitioner, you know, online. And some of those answers, too, have just been long proven to be difficult. You can see library awareness was the most common response across all questions, basically. And that's a perpetual challenge. We hear that a lot. Somebody will say, hey, I wish the library could do, and then they'll describe something that we're already doing. And so the meeting did yield some pretty quick benefits in that regard, I would say. For example, in one meeting, some school district employees were there, and they were like, hey, we'll start putting library programs in the parent newsletter. So that was a fantastic development. And then, of course, too, we'll incorporate these ideas into some of the more long-term work. Awareness in particular will be considered, you know, part of the strategic plan and the theory of change information, too, that we are about to discuss. And that was really brief, which was my goal. But my goal is also to answer any questions if anybody has any.
Any questions for Ryan?
I think we had a few board members come to these community meetings, so some of you may remember being a participant.
Madam Chair. What's next?
We'll be incorporating some of this into the strategic plan, and in particular, this library awareness piece, if you recall, came up in the diversity, equity, and inclusion study, and it also came up in our theory of change work. So that's going to be one of our strategic priorities going forward, which is a big switch for us.
How so?
It hasn't been a main focus. It's been something we wanted to do, but not necessarily a priority in that way. And we can talk a little bit more about that as we get into this theory of change piece, if that's okay.
Sure.
Oh.
Brianne, do you want me to start or do you want to start?
You can start.
Okay. It's been a long night. So theory of change was a concept introduced to me by a Minnesota Council of Nonprofits training over a year ago. And we decided to use it as our small group meeting format in fall of 2019. So Brianne, Ryan, Randy, and Rachel each helped me lead a small group of staff, and they were all volunteers to go through the exercises that was shared in this Council of Nonprofits training called Theory of Change. And so some of the questions we explored were what outcomes are represented by what your organization hopes to accomplish? What is the one big problem that if solved defines success for our organization? And what is the problem our organization holds itself accountable to solving? So we've used this to come up with what will be kind of the bones of the next strategic plan. The last strategic plan had 6 priorities. So this is going to be a much more focused plan this time around. Brianne, do you want to take it from there?
Sure. So, excuse me, this visual really helps break it down not only for staff, but also externally when we talk about what we do and why the library is important. And by having this be digestible, we tried to pare down wordings and concepts so that they can be understood better. We are a library that loves jargon, and so we really try to make it cut and clear. And so going from core values, strategic priorities, our mission, and then our ultimate theory of change, this is essentially the direction that we are looking at for our next strategic plan. And as Karen had mentioned, the biggest difference or change is our strategic priorities. Before, we had operational and service priorities in total, I think 6 or 8. And both on the staff end and as a patron, that is hard to remember that much and to know the significance of each. And so the biggest difference that we are looking at is paring down to 4 strategic priorities, one of them being the library awareness that Karen had mentioned that had been drawn through many of our conversations. And through the theory of change process in our different meetings, etc., we had come to the theory of change conclusion or statement that people in our communities can find and use trusted information they need to thrive. And this breaks down into culture of literacy, community collaboration, and community engagement. And what we are looking at with our theory of change or this visual is then breaking down what each of these 4 components mean in more detail. Is there anything that I was maybe missing from that, Karen, or any questions?
That's in it in a nutshell.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Mary.
I'm sorry. For example, do you have a thought in mind?
On what piece?
Well, like theory of change. You talked about four components.
The four components are the strategic priorities. Prior in the last plan, our service priorities were literacy, access, and lifelong learning. Our right. operational priorities were exceptional service, community focus, and operational excellence. And two of those were actually repeats of the core values. So this allows us to be more focused in the strategic plan in the next round. The operational excellence still provides a place for our non-library departments to put their priorities in, help align all of the departments across the plan. But in all the conversations we've had, it seems like literacy and access have grown in areas of need for our patrons. And library awareness is really what people are looking for now more than the community focus of 5 years ago.
So okay. Other?
Oh, go ahead.
And that
other questions?
Madam Chair, I'm sorry. One more question.
Can you open up the screen so I can see other members of the board? So if there's other questions. Any other questions?
Whatever.
Okay, Mary, you had another one?
Well, I'm just looking for a translation into action. And maybe we're not there yet. Don't know.
Answer your own question.
So library awareness, for example, would be going back to some of the recommendations from the DEI presentation, things like signage in other languages or Zoom focus groups with targeted communities or offering programs or displays around a specific culture. So all of these pieces will fit together once that full plan is put together.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Anything else?
No.
I recognize that we are 15 minutes over. And that was a big night of a lot of information. So I really want to thank the staff, that were with us tonight and all their participation and all that they added and the board. For all their work tonight. So please mark your calendars. Our next meeting is March 16th. There will also be a finance meeting and a personnel meeting that evening, all on the same evening. Any other questions or comments?
Madam Chair, if I could just make a statement here. Since last month was my first meeting and I was quite hesitant to dive into anything. If there are people, I know especially the commissioners are spread pretty thin on committees. If somebody feels like they're overloaded, I'm not on any.
I really appreciate that, Alan. And I'll look at those committees. And if anyone feels like they've taken on too much this year and need to take a break, why don't you just email me or give me a call or call Karen? But I appreciate that, Alan. Okay. Our work is done for the night, so we are adjourned.